Welcome to Because I Want to Know, the podcast where I interview guests about their crazy unique occupations or life experiences. I'm your host, Leslie Fear. So let's get into it, shall we? Hey everyone, today I'm joined with Kaylee Newell. She's a Harlequin romance writer. She also had two parents who were writers, and I think it kind of morphed into her little venture here going into the writing world. She's been my friend for years. We just figured it out how we met. We met in a book club, or it's actually like a book and writers club on Facebook. And I've known her for so long, and guess what? She loves the podcast, and guys, she's got some scary stories to talk about. So Kaylee, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here. So excited.
Well, I am so excited to have you because you and I talk a lot and you'll say, hey, I love this show or this one really resonated or whatever. Yeah. And then you'll say stuff like, I've got a ghost story. And I'm like, listen, we've got to get you on the books to have you here because, because, you know, I have a lot of people that have abilities and I'm not saying you don't, because I think you do have abilities. I think we all kind of do in our own ways. But I also think that having someone who is more of a writer and more analytical on the show and then telling me her take, I think that's so interesting. So, and we're going to talk about your books in just a little while. So tell me about, you are married with two daughters and you have some dogs. So guys, if you hear the dogs in the background, it's just your little doggies getting excited because they just ate, apparently.
We have four dogs and we just got two. Oh, she's coughing again. We have two elderly Chihuahua mixes. They're 14. So one of them, Petunia, she has a little old lady cough. So sometimes you'll hear her coughing. And so our thing is, if you've seen Christmas Vacation when the Rottweiler is yakking underneath the table, we're like, oh, she got it up.
She's fine now.
She's fine now. But yeah, so the two bigger ones are taking a nap. So hopefully the little ones will follow suit and you won't hear.
Totally fine. Yeah, it's totally fine. My listeners have heard, as you know, my dogs used to walk on the wood floors where I used to record. And now I'm in a room that's carpeted. So it's fine. I'm in a bedroom. So anyway, so tell me, I know you have like three stories, two of which were at a place where you, like a hotel, and one was at your home. Which one do you want to start with first?
Oh, gosh. I'll start with the one at home. I guess I'll do chronological order when my kids were babies, and then I'll move up. But so when we were first married, we bought a little house. It was like a little stucco house. It was so cute, kind of like a Spanish style architecture. And it was built in, I believe, 1930. And that house, the front bedroom, the bedroom that faced the street, the way that this house was built was the original house only had one bedroom and one bath and then a little living room. And then they built on the master bedroom like in the 50s. Okay. So my husband and I slept in the master bedroom. And when Lucy came along, our oldest, we had her nursery in the front bedroom. Mm-hmm. And so when she was a baby, I would go in there and nurse her in the rocking chair and then like leave her in her crib. I would have brought her back into bed with us. However, I was afraid I was going to roll over on her.
Right. Yeah.
All those worries when you're a new mom.
Oh, sure.
But anyway, I left her in the front bedroom to go back to sleep. But I always felt something off in that room. And it was always colder than the rest of the house. And it was just, I can't even describe the feeling, but you would walk in it and the hair would stand up on your arms, or you would get goosebumps on your scalp, that type of thing. I never really liked it. I didn't feel like it was necessarily like a bad presence, but I didn't necessarily feel like it was a warm presence either. Okay. I just felt like there was something there. And at that point in time, I didn't even feel like the house was haunted. I just felt like there was something. I just didn't feel settled with it.
Wow.
So one night, Lucy woke up. It was probably 1 or 2 in the morning. And she woke up screaming, screaming. Mm. And she was probably, 7 months old, 8 months old. And I walked into her room and she had pulled herself up and was trying to get her leg over the side of the crib. Like she was trying to crawl out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And she was frantic. So at the time I was like, well, this feels more than just like a bad dream or whatever. She was like desperate for me to get in there. It was almost like she'd been pinched or something. I don't know. But it was like she was very, very upset. Mm-hmm. So I got her out of the crib and my husband woke up too. And he walked in there and he's like, well, what's going on? I was like, I don't know. You know, and maybe she's sick or something. I'm not sure. Yeah. But I walked the room with her for a little bit until she kind of calmed down a little bit. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to go back to bed. And so he went back to bed and I sat in the rocking chair. I didn't turn on any of the lights. I had the little nightlight and everything. And mm-hmm. I sat in the rocking chair and I started nursing her. And she started calming down and eventually she fell back asleep and I was getting ready to put her back in her crib. And all of a sudden it sounded like it was coming from the living room. Mm-hmm. We never did figure out where it was coming from. It sounded like a bookcase fell over.
What?
It was that loud.
Are you kidding
and
me?
I stood up, like I just about dropped Lucy on the floor. I stood up really fast and yeah. Matt came running into the bedroom. He was like, what was that? Because he thought something had fallen over in the nursery.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. I thought you did something like in the living room or something. He's like, no. And so he turned on all the lights in the house. And the thing is, we had our two dogs at the time never barked. Mm-hmm. They never, ever, ever made a sound.
Yeah.
So we were thinking maybe they thought that it was coming from us, like we did something inside the house, which is what we thought about each other, that one of us had done.
Sure.
He walked around the entire house, never found anything astray or anything even out of place. But it was so loud that it just about shook the house. And I have to tell you, after that experience, we decided to sell the house and move.
Yeah. I mean,
we were so shaken by that because, you know, sometimes when stuff like that happens, you can kind of tell yourself, oh, well, it might have been this or it might have been that, you know, to kind of feel at peace with it.
Yeah.
We never could find any reason, no reason for that. And so, after that, we talked about it and we just both felt, and it wasn't just that, it was the general feeling in that room that we both kind of had. And we were like, nah, no. And partnered with the fact that Lucy was so upset, like something was going on that night.
Oh,
something was going on. Yeah. I mean, and she was just a little baby and she was just desperate to get out of there.
Oh my God. And that'll pull on your heartstrings too. But also you wonder if it's like the past residents that are just trying to get your attention or whatever. And maybe they, you know, but you know, like in The Others, you know, the movie, The Others, where they're your ghosts and all that. And then it kind of makes you go, okay, so maybe in their dimension, they did have something crash to get your attention. It's just not in yours, right?
Yeah. It was one of those experiences that, and that house is just down the street from us. We just moved like a block away because we loved the neighborhood, but we couldn't do that house anymore. And whenever we drive by, and I love that house, but I just couldn't. And now I wonder, because there's somebody in there and I wonder if they've ever had any experiences there or if it was just us, you know, I don't know.
Well, you know, I bet you they do. But you know, so many people just don't talk about that kind of stuff, you know, I mean, or they, you know, or maybe they're not bothered by it. I don't know.
Some people maybe, and I imagine that maybe in the spirit world, there are people who just, you know, they just don't like some people for some reason, or they don't want people there for some reason. And maybe other people are okay. I don't know. I just know that our experience there was, it wasn't good.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily good.
And it sounds like it kind of ramped up when you had a baby.
It did.
Yeah.
It definitely did. Yeah. And that particular room, maybe somebody didn't want us in that room or I don't know what it was.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So tell me about when you went to a couple hotels. Was it in like the same year or was it different years, or tell me more?
So this was several years later. This probably happened. Okay. So this was probably about 10 years ago.
Okay.
My husband and I went to, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Hasita Head Lighthouse.
No.
It's on Cape Perpetua on the Oregon coast.
Oh.
And if any of your listeners want to look this place up, the pictures of it are absolutely breathtaking. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen in my life. And it is this lighthouse that's perched on kind of a cliff on Cape Perpetua. It's between Florence, Oregon and Newport, Oregon. So it's right on the coast, and it's this beautiful lighthouse that was built, I believe, in 1892. Okay. It's when it was built, and then it first started working in 1894. Okay. And so there's a lighthouse, and then there's the, they built two lighthouse keepers' houses. And one of them, I think, caught on fire like a century ago. So there's only one of them now. Okay. And it's just absolutely beautiful, like white building with a beautiful red roof overlooking the cliff. And this story, it's a little bit debated because they have records of the lighthouse keepers, but they don't have records of their wives or their families. Okay. But the story goes that around the turn of the century, the lighthouse keeper's family was there in one of the houses, and they lost a child. A toddler fell off the cliff and drowned. Okay. And so the mother, her name is Rue, R-U-E. Okay. She is said to come back and walk the halls of that house. And she's supposed to have gray hair and a Victorian dress. Oh, okay. Anyway, that's Hasita Head Lighthouse. And it is a bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. So you can stay there. Okay. And we stayed there for one of our anniversaries. And of course, I am so fascinated by supernatural things. So we asked to stay in Rue's room.
Oh, did you really?
Like, the most haunted room.
Girl.
I don't even know if that was really her name, but decades ago, some students came to the lighthouse and they did a like seance, and they got a Ouija board out, and they said that she spelled out her name, R-U-E, for them. So ever since then, they call the ghost Rue.
Okay.
So anyway, we stayed in Rue's room, and Hasita Head is one of those places, like the house that I was just telling you about. You walk in and you're hyper aware, like you feel something there. You just feel it. It's kind of like a heaviness on your shoulders. I don't know how to describe it. And it's not a bad feeling. It's really not. It's not scary, but it gives you chills. It's like there's definitely something here. And so, you know, we had a lovely afternoon and we walked on the beach and everything, but we were very, very like anxious for that night because we're like, well, is anything going to happen?
Right.
And, you know, so we get ready for bed and we go to bed, and there's like, I mean, nothing has happened so far. We're like, well, you know, but we feel it.
Yeah.
So in the middle of the night, we wake up and it's probably about 3 a.m. And we're both awake at the same time because we probably heard something, but we couldn't quite capture it in our consciousness. But we were like, we were both awake at the same time, but we couldn't figure out what had woken us up. And we're lying there, you know, kind of whispering back and forth because the house is so quiet. There were other guests there, but, you know, everybody was asleep.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we heard from underneath the bed, it was like a marble dropped.
What?
You know how that sound of a marble dropping and then rolling across the floor, and it was underneath the bed.
From under the bed?
From underneath the bed.
Oh no.
And it's like, you know that sound of something hard rolling across a hardwood floor, that hollow kind of sound.
Yeah.
And then it came to rest on the wall. You could hear it tap and stop.
Oh,
and so we were like freaking out. And and I told my husband, I'm like, turn on the light and look, we got to look under the bed. He's like, I am not turning on the light and looking under the bed. Forget it. And he's like, you turn on the light and look under the bed. I'm like, no way am I looking under the bed. No way in hell am I doing that.
Right.
So we stayed awake for about like another half an hour daring each other to turn on the light and look under the bed. And we would not do it. So we finally fell asleep. I don't know how long it took us to fall back asleep. And we're like, we'll look in the morning. As soon as it gets light, we'll look in the morning. So as soon as it got light, we both woke up just about dawn, like, because we were so amped up.
Oh,
and he, just to give you some perspective, he is not as fascinated by the supernatural as I am. Like, he is very much...
He's like my husband.
Yeah, he's kind of like, he's very skeptical.
Yeah,
very, very skeptical.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt what we heard. Sure. We heard something. And like, why would something drop? Like, drop from where?
I know.
And yeah. And so as soon as it got light, we woke up and looked under the bed and there was nothing there. Like, nothing. There was like nothing. It was completely hardwood, completely swept up and perfectly neat and tidy, and we never found what made that sound. And it kind of reminded me of that experience in our house where it's like there was definite sound, and it was like there was just nothing there.
But you know what I have to ask is, he heard it in your house, he heard it in this little inn, in this little lighthouse inn, and he's still skeptical. What did he think about it?
He will tell you to this day, he's like, there are some things that there's just no explanation for. And he said, that's one of the things that I have experienced that there's just no explanation for.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
He's like, I can't, because he's a physical therapist. So he's very much based in science, you know, and he can't explain it. He can't explain it. And so it's funny because he'll tell that story now to this day. And I watch him like, he's just like fascinated by it.
Yeah.
To watch this natural skeptic be fascinated by something he just cannot explain, it's kind of fun.
It's like my husband. My husband, nothing like that, like a big crash or anything like that has really ever happened with, you know, for my husband and I. Had it happened, he might go, okay, well, maybe there's something to this. He still loves me and you know all the things. I talk about him all the time on the podcast. But he thinks it's just a bunch of garbly-goop. He just does.
Yeah.
You know?
And I get that. I totally get that, because you tell these stories to some people and they're like, uh-huh. Like, you might have been dreaming it or, you know, something. Had to have made that sound, that, you know. But for me, the fact that Matt experienced the exact same thing, he heard the exact same thing that I did and was spooked by it just like I was.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something there. I don't know what it is.
Absolutely.
I can't say what it is, but there's something there.
Well, and you know, like I said before we started recording, we're not going to know all the answers. You know, we can't know all those. But the thing is, I just don't understand how they won't even open up the box a little bit. And let me walk in and talk to you more about it. Because, but you know what? Here's what's good, Kaylee. My husband grounds me, because you can kind of get lost in this stuff a little bit.
That is very, very true.
You know
I feel like that is a perfect way to describe it. It's like they kind of keep you centered. Because, I can get totally immersed in it and he pulls me back.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So that's that story. So did you leave, or was that kind of the ending to that story?
So that was the big humdinger of that trip.
Okay.
However, I have to say, the next morning, while we were both still very much unsettled by what happened, he called me into the bathroom and the shower curtain was like swinging back and forth.
Oh my
but
God.
There was no, he's like, you got to come see this. And there was no vent. There's no draft. There's nothing, but it was swinging back and forth.
No.
And we're like, okay, I don't need to go to the bathroom as much as I thought.
We'll just go to the rest stop.
But that place is incredible. Any ghost lover or, you know, supernatural aficionado who lives on the West Coast should try to make that a bucket list item, because it is, not only is it just breathtakingly beautiful, but there's something there. And the really cool thing, like, there's no TV there. There's no, you know, I don't even think they really have internet there.
Yeah.
It's just, you go for the experience, for the fire in your room or whatever, and the wine and in the evenings and talking to the other guests. But they have like a journal in the parlor. And I sat down, you know, the night before this happened and read all of everybody's experiences,
know,
because they'll write about Rue and if they saw anything. Everybody's experiences just range from all different kinds of experiences.
Wow.
but so many people have either seen something. Well, one of the most famous stories about Hasita Head is that in the 60s, they were remodeling part of it. Yeah. And there was a worker who was up in the attic. So the attic is also supposed to be one of the most haunted places in the house. Okay. And he broke a window and he didn't clean up the glass or anything. Mm. And he came back later in the day and it was all swept up into a nice little pile. Ooh. That's one of the things that people say that they hear is sweeping sounds coming from the attic.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Definitely still have ghosts there. So, wow. Yeah, I would have loved to have just sat down and read all those stories too. So tell me about the next one.
Okay, the next one happened at the Bandon River House. And Bandon is a little town also on the Oregon coast. Mm-hmm. And this building was built in, was it built? 1902. Okay. And it was used as a retail business for most of its lifetime. They sold shoes and leather goods and furnishings there. And it is one of the most interesting buildings in Bandon because there was a huge fire in Bandon in the 30s and most of the houses and downtown were destroyed. So this building was actually one of the only buildings downtown that survived the fire.
Wow. Okay.
But it is kind of picture a big white two-story building overlooking the Coquille River. And it's very beautiful and very, very old.
Nice.
So anyway, now it's a hotel. You can stay there and it sleeps like 10 people. So there's three bedrooms upstairs and I think two bedrooms downstairs and a big kitchen. We went there with our extended family 8 or 9 years ago.
Okay.
And Matt and I were going to stay in the upstairs bedroom. And there was a little kind of smaller bedroom off to the side that was separated by French doors that we were going to put the kids in. So there's my two daughters and my niece.
Okay.
And they were all going to sleep in that little room off to the side. And so Matt, in the middle of the night, he was not asleep. He was lying on his stomach and I was lying beside him.
Okay.
And he was lying on his stomach and he couldn't really get to sleep. And he heard the French doors kind of like push open, like a whisper open.
Okay.
And it's all hardwood floors. And he heard kind of like the thump of feet walking up to the bed. At this point, both of our kids crawled into bed with us in the middle of the night.
Oh.
And yeah. And so he, you know, felt one of the girls like get up into the bed, but they were like straddling the back of his legs. So like he was on his stomach and he felt them like straddling the back of his legs. He didn't know if it was Lucy or Clara, but he's like, if you're going to get in bed, just get in bed, you know, just get in bed, hurry up and get in bed. I mean, he said this out loud. And so he felt them shift to the middle of the bed and lie down beside him.
Okay.
And he lay there for a minute and he's trying to get comfortable and he rolled over and there was nobody there. Just
Ooh.
Me. Just
oh
me
my
lying
God.
There.
And are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And he was completely
Freaked
taken
out?
Aback by that.
Yeah.
Like he had no, he was going to wake me up, but he didn't want to like scare me.
Yeah.
So his first thought was, did I imagine that? Or, you know, did the girls, were they really awake? So he went and checked on them. They were all asleep in their beds.
Wow.
So as soon as I woke up in the morning, he said, did you feel that last night? Did you feel one of the girls crawl in bed with us last night? And I was like, no. And he told me what happened, and it was so creepy. I have since learned that that's one of the most common experiences is weight on your legs, like on your lower half in bed.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. Like if you're going to experience something like that, like a presence at night when you're in bed, it's going to be a weight on your legs like that. And he was awake. He was not dreaming. He was not imagining it.
Yeah.
It really happened. That's another one of the things that he's like, I cannot explain that. I mean, it was like, it was monumental for him. And he's still skeptical, but that's another story that he's like, that definitely happened.
Yeah. And it's funny because when you were talking about your girls, well, they come in at night, you know, and I was thinking, okay, well, that's not the story. She's going to keep going. And then when you said that was the story, Yeah. I was like, what? Because having just somebody straddle your legs, you know, that's just a kid thing to do. I'm going to come in, I'm going to pounce on mom and dad, and they're on their stomach, so they can't see me. Ha, ha, ha. And then, so he was like, just get in bed. Just get in bed. I'm tired, you know?
And the fact that he said it out loud. Like, yeah. He's like, just go ahead. If you're going to get in bed, just get in bed. Hurry up. Yeah. And then he felt that weight shift, you know, and be right in between us. And then he turned over and there was nothing.
Now, you didn't, were you asleep this whole time or what happened with you?
Okay. Yeah, okay. I slept through the entire thing. Yeah. So that was just him who experienced that. The skeptic.
It's always the skeptics. I know. And, you know, like I said, if anything like that had happened for Randy or, you know, between us like that, mm-hmm. I would love to have seen or hear what he had to say about it. But, you know, Mr. CPA, Mr. Analytical, yes. You know, no, I was dreaming or, you know, we were made. Although, don't get me wrong, there have been times and I can't remember specifics, but I remember one time, gosh, this was years ago. When something kind of crazy happened, I think it was a noise, kind of like your hutch or something falling down or a bookcase or something falling down. And it was a really loud noise and we could not find it. And I just now thought of that and we couldn't find it. So, yeah, I mean, and you're just like,
maybe that's a thing. I mean, it really gives me goosebumps when I think about the veil to the other side. Yes. I had a good friend tell me one time after my dad passed that the veil is so thin. It's right. The only thing that separates us, you know, to the other side. And to think that there are people trying to maybe communicate and, you know, communicate with us, or it makes sense to me that there are different dimensions.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah. And the more we talk about ghost kind of stuff, it makes me think they're just on a different frequency. They're just in a different dimension or whatever, because I feel like they can probably see us because they're on a higher level. And we vibrate so much lower and
exactly. Yeah. And it does make me think of that movie, The Others, like maybe we're the ones that are, you know,
ghosts.
Operating on that quote unquote, the other side. Yeah. And it's just fascinating to me. I love that there are mysteries like that in our world that, you know, we don't have the answers to, and you just have to kind of open up your heart and your mind, you know, to kind of try to experience those things.
Yeah. Just keep that box open because, like I said, anything's possible. You know, I mean, and I say that guardedly just because, let me put it this way, anything's possible, I think, in the paranormal kind of or supernatural kind of thing. And that's kind of where I went with that. But because you like the supernatural, do you have any books that are kind of paranormal, supernatural?
I do. My first book, A Death That Lingers, is about a woman who escapes an abusive marriage and she goes back to the little town where her grandparents live. And she starts experiencing all of these supernatural things. And she learns a couple days later that her husband was killed in a car accident, like looking for her.
Oh, wow.
And so all of the things that are happening to her, it feels like are actually her husband's ghost. So he like stalks her in human form, but then he also stalks her when he's a ghost. Gosh, so that was my first book, A Death That Lingers. Yeah.
Hey, listen, you know, same with me, you know, I have all paranormal romance novels. That's all I ever wrote. So, cause I just always had to have a paranormal aspect. Now I know you guys, Kaylee is an award-winning writer. She won the Rita Award, which that's a huge thing. No, she did. She won that award for Best Contemporary Romance. And also, like I said, Harlequin Romance just picked her up. She's also written for Amazon's, is it Tool? Is that the name of the?
Yeah, Thule is one of my publishers and then Harlequin is the other. And I'm so happy to be able to do what I love to do, and that's make up stories.
Yeah, well,
so fun.
I tell you, because I looked up your Goodreads, because I haven't looked at it in a long time. I haven't looked at Goodreads forever. And all of your books are like 4 and above. And that's hard to do on Goodreads because they're tough.
Goodreads is vicious. They can be vicious.
Yeah. So now, how many books have you written?
I am currently writing number 25.
Oh my gosh, girl, listen to you. Now, are the Harlequin romances different than your Thule? Are there ones that are a little more risque? Are they all kind of the same? Okay, tell me more.
My Harlequin ones, they're all closed door, so they're on the sweeter side.
Okay.
And then my books with Thule and my backlist with little publisher, wonderful little publisher that's no longer around anymore, unfortunately, Beachwalk Press, those are very spicy. I've kind of leaned into the small town, you know, sweeter stories. And my current books with Harlequin actually take place on the Oregon coast.
Nice.
And the first one, their Sweet Coastal Reunion, it takes place in a Victorian house where this woman grew up with her foster mother. And so I tried to weave a little bit of paranormal in there.
Yeah.
The line is, it's not a paranormal line, special edition, but I added a little bit of ghosty stuff in that one.
It's
hard to get away from because I love it so much.
Well, also, I think it adds a little bit of depth to it because you invariably have to include some history, you know?
Yeah. And most people, I think when they see a beautiful Victorian house on a cliff, their mind kind of naturally goes to what if, or I wonder,
know.
You know, if those walls could talk, what would
know.
They say?
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I love the fact that you have all these different kinds of books. It's not just one kind. Like you have some spicy ones. You have some, you know, regular, like maybe Hallmarky kind of ones, you know, the Harlequin romance. And then you also have, you know, I think you have a couple brothers series. Right?
Yes, I have the Cole brothers and the Harlow brothers.
Yes.
Yeah, my first Harlow brothers, that's the one, Tanner's Promise. That one is like kind of the book of my heart because I was lucky enough to final on the Rita with that one before the Rita went away. But so, yeah, there's lots of different kinds of books, but they're definitely sweeter now. They used to be very spicy. But I have also found there's only so many different ways you can write a sex scene. So
girl,
I'm like,
tell me about it. I wrote for Kristen Proby's little publishing company before she folded that. I think there's still some writers in that, but I had to get my rights back just because I think it was just too much for her to handle, to be honest with you. But I wrote a book called Easy Fix, and it's my most steamy book, and it's no longer available on Amazon. I just need to rewrite it a little bit. It's one of those sister books to her book, so I have to take some of her named characters out. But I tell you what, I had so much fun with that book. But you're right, only write, because I only had like two, you know, intimate scenes, and it's like, how many different ways? You know, I want to talk about, I want to include the texting and how they talk about when they're doing that, or I want to include just that I'm a dialogue person. Yeah,
exactly. It's not that that's not wonderful to write and wonderful to read, but I'm just a little bit over it. It's kind of like,
I know, because I love the dialogue. I love that's my passion. I was so enamored with dialogue. That was my thing. The description and all that was the hardest stuff I had to write.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a process.
It is a process, I tell you. And it's expensive, especially if you're an independent author, which I was. So, and I wrote nine books. I rewrote one. So really officially eight. And I loved it. But now I love the podcasting more, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like a natural extension. It's a creative outlet. And, you know, you still get to tell stories and you get to hear stories. And by the way, your covers for your books, they're so beautiful.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I have a really good, she's no longer doing them. Michelle Priest. Uh-huh. She used to do them. And then she just kind of went out and decided not to do them anymore. But she was so fantastic. I know a couple other people I could use. And people are saying, I would love a sequel to this or a sequel to that. And I'm like, you know, I don't have that passion for book writing like I do now for this. I really don't.
Yeah, and that's okay. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you won't in the future.
Right.
And if you don't ever, that's wonderful too. I think it's a wonderful creative outlet. The podcasting is amazing. It really, really is.
Thank you.
I am a fangirl of yours for sure.
Well, right back at you, girl. And I know a lot of your books are on audio as well, correct?
Yes. Oh, I forgot. Yeah, my Wolf Creek, those are also paranormal. Those are shifter.
Ooh.
Romances, and those take place in Wolf Creek, Oregon, which is a real place.
Ooh.
And that is also, the Wolf Creek Inn is also it's a real place, and it's also very haunted.
Oh,
and so those books take place in Wolf Creek and also in the Wolf Creek Inn. And when I say shifter, they're not in your face shifter, like they're very subtle. They're kind of like the reader kind of has to peel back the onion layers to get to the point where you figure out okay, this is really happening. And some people don't like that. Some people like the real, you know, they like the hero running around as a werewolf, right? And they can see that. And then other people like a more subtle approach, but these are more subtle. So
subtle is always going to be my thing, because when I wrote Apollo Sun, he was the son of a demigod. He was the son of Apollo. And so he was a demigod. So he was still immortal, but he met a girl and she accidentally cut herself, and her blood reached some of the water that was in the tank of the fish that he had. And the water was from Poseidon, and she became immortal, and he had to tell her. And she's like, what are you talking about?
Amazing premise. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's wonderful. How did you come up with that?
Oh girl, I could come up with all kinds of stories. And it was, they lived in the same apartment complex, but it ended up, he owned the entire apartment complex. It was a house with four actual units, and it was an old, you know, 20 style apartment. And he was redoing everything, and he was also a doctor, and they met on the stairs, and he tried to stay away from her, but you know, because he's just trying to be good, and it ended up, you know, yeah. And I don't want to give it away, but listen, it was one of my favorite books I wrote too, and it was one of the later books too. It was so fun.
Oh,
the dialogue alone. So, but anyway, but no, enough about me. I'm going to add all of your information in my show notes. Can everybody find your books anywhere? What's going on?
I did away with my website.
Okay.
So all of my stuff is on Amazon. Like I have an author page on Amazon where you can find everything. It was kind of easier that way. So yeah, everything you can find on Amazon. And I want to thank you again for having me on. I had so much fun.
I love your stories, and I love hearing it from someone who's not necessarily gifted, but I think we kind of all are. And I think they were just attracted to you, possibly, and maybe even your husband, because maybe he even has ability to kind of feel something as well. And they know that. And I think that's attractive to them.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. You know, if you're going to try to communicate with somebody, you try to communicate with somebody who's going to maybe be open to communicating back, or at least be able to hear you, to hear what you're saying. So it definitely makes sense to me.
Yeah, because it's a thrill to them that they can be seen and they can be heard. That's a thrill. And I happen to know that.
Yeah.
So, but no, Kaylee, you have been fantastic. I may have to have you back for some more stories. You never know.
Yeah. Oh, I would love that.
But no, I'll add all of your information on my show notes. And thank you again for being on my show, girl.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, I love providing because I want to know at no cost. So if you like what you heard, please leave me a 5-star review, or you can just buy me a cup of coffee. It's kind of like a Patreon, but you don't have a monthly subscription and you can give whatever you feel led to give. I am a one-woman show, and I do all of my scheduling and my interviewing and my editing. So just know your support is so greatly appreciated. And one more thing, I am a paranormal romance novelist, and you can find all of my books on Amazon. Just look up my name. I'm very easy to find. Thank you guys again, and I will see you next week.